I remember the trauma I received going to Olin Mills with my family, getting family photos. They still have Olin Mills. That place still around? Olin Mills, my goodness. It was like we're always fighting in the car on the way there. Itchy, my clothes are, my hair be out of whack. My mom be spitting on her hand and jamming my head to try to get it down. And always, always rough. And we're not going to talk today about DNA legal family, whether you've adopted somebody in the family or you're related through DNA to family. There certainly is a sacred place for that. That's incredibly important. But we're actually going to look at a different definition of family, the meaning of family that we actually find most often reflected in the New Testament portion of the Bible. And that is that family is when anybody has come into relationship with God through Jesus Christ, that they are family. There is the capital C church, which is all people who are in relationship with Jesus in all different time periods, all different corners of the globe, all denominations, whatever they are. And there is the small C church, which is local churches that are gathering just like we are today. These are referred to in the Bible as families. So that's what we're going to look at today. And you might be brand new here today, and this obviously is not your family right now, but you're maybe checking us out, or maybe you're trying to figure out, I don't know if there's anything special about Jesus or if I even believe in God. That's great. Hopefully you're going to see there's something deeper relation that God is calling a group of people, and maybe someday you want to be a part of it. That would be awesome, but let's pray before we go any further. God, thank you that you would gather people today to hear something like this. I just look in this dark room, I go, my goodness, it's pretty nice outside, and yet people are gathered in a dark room here to hopefully get a glimpse of you. And so I pray that that happens. You touch us in a unique way. You teach us. You help us encounter you. And I thank you for the honor to do it and help me to be accurate and helpful. And I pray these things in your name. Amen. In the book of Acts chapter 2, verse 48, it talks about the early church. Jesus had vacated the planet, and now his followers are establishing some rhythms. And at this point in their history, in the nation, in the city of Jerusalem, they're establishing some rhythms. Check them out. It says this, and day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes. So now every day they're hanging out in a temple, and every day they're breaking bread in their homes. This is also the word oikos. They're in an oikos. This is the Greek word for extended family. And they're spending time in multiple environments as a family would. Right now in our country, we are longing for family more than we ever have, arguably. And especially, this is being seen in the millennial generation, the 20-somethings in our midst. Longing for family. I mean, social networking has taken off, not just, in my opinion, not just because we have the technology for Facebook to take off, but also because we have a generation that's longing for ties more so than any other generation. I don't know if the baby boomers had the internet technology that we have right now, if Facebook would have been such a hit, or if Twitter would have been such a hit. I really don't. But today, we have millennials who value relational connection over virtually anything else. This is part of the reason why older generations are down on millennials. Actually, this is true in American history. Older generations are always down on the younger generations. In all of American history, maybe all of world history, I don't know much about the rest of the world, but we just are. And older generations are looking at millennials and going, my goodness, you don't want to work 80 hours a week or 60 hours a week. What's going on there? And there's all kind of tension there, in large part because millennials have seen crazy work hours, and they like to work, or you like to work. I wish I was a we, because I'm not 20-something any longer. But you're valuing relationships over some of the things that previous generations would have done. And actually, we're seeing this at how restaurants are being constructed. Now you're seeing more restaurants where there's big tables, where people can come and have family-style meetings with their friends, and restaurants are delivering a bunch of small plates, assuming you're going to be eating off of one another's plates. Family style. There's a young hunger. There's a thirst here. One study I ran across this last week says this, 75% of millennials see themselves as authentic and are not willing to compromise their family and personal values. And yet, at the same time, no matter what generation we're a part of, we're more isolated today than ever before. We're more lonely and longing for social friendship connection, family sense of belonging than ever before. Why do I say that? It's because the happiness indicators that I mentioned a couple weeks ago keep going down, 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 doobie, doobie, down, down for America. It's because we devalue relationships is one of the massive reasons. You can see this in how we build houses. We now have what sociologists refer to as the decking of America. Let's all get to the back of our houses, behind our stockade fences, and it's just like stay away from people. I was having some interact with some really close friends the other night. Someone invited us over to their house, and we actually ate dinner on the front porch. They have a large enough front porch, and it was how it was constructed way back in the day, because people would be walking up and down sidewalks, and you'd be having dinner on the front porch, interacting. We don't want to interact with anybody anymore. We want to retreat, get to our solace of comfort, whatever it is. We see Sprint had a campaign recently called Framly. Have you seen that? What's the idea? Okay, you want to realize that those who are closest to you aren't just DNA or legal family, but you want to bring your friends in the midst of it, our family. And see, when we're doing these things like family, or we're having group meals with shared plates, we're tapping into this biblical value of family, specifically of church family. The good news is, no matter where you are in frustration with your DNA family, there's another family you can be a part of and you can get the most out of. It's called your church family. It's called the family of God. Now let's go back to that passage I looked at before in Acts 2. And remember, it talked about every day they met in the temple and house to house, or their oikos. This was their extended family. There's times in the New Testament where somebody comes to know Christ and is baptized, like the Roman jailer. I don't want to go into the whole story right now, but it says the Roman jailer went home and he and his whole household were baptized. That doesn't mean everybody in his household received Jesus and converted. It means everybody who he was in family with, extended family, friends, even servants of his, all wanted to honor what he had done and kind of give their approval to what he had done. Because it was oikos, it was this extended family idea that they had in their culture that we're longing for more and more in our culture. So, on the two extremes in that passage, you see every day they met in the temple, and every day they met house to house, or the Greek word oikos. These are two extreme realms that were to operate as family. And now in the temple, which is similar to this, I mean, we're not killing sheep right now. But what you're doing right now is not too unsimilar to what you would do in the temple of the first century. What's happening? It's one, there's a lot of people here, so it's big. Number two, you're very passive right now. I mean, you stand and sing every once in a while. You're laughing at my stupid jokes. Hopefully you laugh at some more today. You're doing that. But for the most part, I mean, you're pretty passive receiving, just like in the temple. The priest is doing his things, and the people were sort of passive. And it's also very structured. I mean, there's a lot of time that goes into figuring out how do we make this fit in 65 minutes. There's run-throughs, there's planning meetings, all that kind of stuff. Now, when you're interacting in your home with other people, it's smaller. It's very active. You're encouraging one another. You're doing dishes. You're maybe saying, hey, I was reading in the Bible this, and I just wanted to share it with you. It's very active. Someone has a hurt or a bruise, you're bandaging up. And it's very spontaneous. You never know exactly what's going to happen. And so what happens in believers here in our country is very frequently these two camps are at war with one another. So the people who like sort of this mode of operation, like, oh, that big church like Karacha, and then people over here look and feel like, oh, you're just a bunch of little rabbles who can't ever be happy with anything. Oh, what are you doing? And here's the crazy thing. In the early church, everyone did all of these things. In fact, all of these things are referred to in the Bible as family. In the book of Acts, chapter 13, verse 26, it says, brothers, sons of the family of Abraham, and those among you who fear God, to us has been sent the message of this salvation. Brothers, whenever you're in a context where someone has your same faith, you are a brother, you are a sister. The Bible doesn't say you're like a brother, you're like a sister, you are a brother, and sons of Abraham. So everybody who is on Abraham's downline, that was Jesus and his disciples and people who received him, all that stuff, are one family. That's pretty darn big. The family dynamics are such that you can't know everybody, certainly, but we are of the same family. In the book of Ephesians chapter 2, it gives it another spin. So then, you're no longer strangers and aliens, but you're fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God. I don't know if you've ever been to a culture before where you were the foreigner, where your native tongue was not their native tongue. It's very uncomfortable. Where the clothes you wear, even though you look okay here in America, when you're there, you just realize you don't quite look the same. And if you're in that situation, you feel like a stranger. You obviously understand that you are an alien. And then you might bump into somebody who's from your neck of the woods. You're like, oh my gosh, you're from Cincinnati. Oh, great. Oh, all of a sudden you start talking. You feel a sense of connection. It's as if you're family, because you all of a sudden have perspective on how different you are. And this is saying that when you come into the church, the family of God, there's a household that's there, and there's a group of people that you're communing with that are just understanding who you are and where you're going. In fact, the closer you get to God, the more alien and strange you feel in America right now. Because the closer you get to God, the more you realize, my goodness, the things that people are thinking and believing and saying, am I even living this? You feel more and more awkward. More and more awkward. And then when you're around family, there is this sense of belonging, this sense of, okay, I can let my hair down. I don't have to defend everything. I don't have to feel like I'm going to be grilled for my beliefs or my this or my that. And what excites me about this message today, if we get the meaning of this word family, a lot of our lives in here will be a lot different, a lot more meaningful, and a lot more powerful. Why is that? It's because very few of us in here are having any sense of family from being a part of our Crossroads family. Very few of us. How do I know this? Because several weeks ago, we did a survey, and 40% of us said that we never interact with anybody at Crossroads outside of a weekend service. 40% of us. 20% of us said we might see somebody from Crossroads once outside of a weekend service, which, you know, you could check that box if you're at a urinal. You know, you're kind of a urinal, I got care. You're at a urinal there, and all of a sudden, like, you go to Crossroads? Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. You had your connection. I have a friend who goes to the urinal, always does this. I'm like, what is up with the hands up there? That's weird. Me, when I'm a urinal, I'm just like staring ahead, not looking. I'm convinced that the recipe for turning ceramic tile into gold dust is just straight ahead. I'm just going to keep looking at it. So, where was I? Oh, okay, good. Now, talking about family, there is one of the things that happens here in our families, we have this thing called staff, and our staff is pretty healthy. Whenever we take surveys and such, we really test out really, really high, because it's a really healthy culture. But to be clear, our staff culture is not family. Our staff is family in that all of us may follow Jesus, and therefore we are brothers and sisters. But I always get a little bit oogie out when I hear a staff member refer, like I did a while ago, someone say, gosh, this staff, you're my family. I hear that, I go, oh no, this is not good, because I knew this person was going to get let go in a couple weeks. I'm going, oh no, this is not good. And I was reminded of this when I was reading in the Harvard Business Review, one of the blogs someone sent me. It says this, when CEOs describe their company as being like family, we think they mean well. They're searching for a model that represents the kind of relationships they want to have with their employees, a lifetime relationship with a sense of belonging. But using the term family makes it easy for misunderstandings to arise. In a real family, parents can't fire their children. Try to imagine disowning your child for poor performance. Well, we're sorry, Susie, but your mom and I have decided you're just not a good fit. Your table-setting effort has been deteriorating for the past 6 months, and your obsession with ponies just isn't adding any value. We're gonna have to go ahead and let you go, but don't take it the wrong way. It's just family. It's just business. It's just family. Why are CEOs talking about their company being family? It's because they're trying to tap into this longing that we have for family, this longing we need for major, major connection. And people aren't getting that connection in churches. That's why there is this documentation of the rise of the nuns, not the Catholic cloister kind, but the rise of the nuns, those who, when we're asked to check our religious affiliation, we're not Protestant, we're not Catholic, we're nuns. And why is there the rise of the nuns? It's because America used to be a cultural place where to fit in, to be part of the culture, you had to go to church. No longer is it that way any longer. And not only that, well, the reason why isn't that is because people go to church and there's no sense of family at all. why in the world would I go there? It's just like rules and obligations and ritualism and nothingness that means anything to my life. Because we're not happy unless we're having a connection. And the thing that breaks my heart about it is Jesus created a family that's been making amazing connections for millennia and has been changing the world, and we're devaluing his family, the family of the local church. In his culture, DNA, legal family was everything, everything. Because it wasn't just the way that you belonged to society, it's the way you got things going financially in your own life. The eldest son would inherit the lion's share of the inheritance, and that would be because they had a family business that they would have to manage and push forward. And if they dispersed it throughout all of the different children like we do, in our isolated American culture, when you die and you're going to leave inheritance, you give it equally to everybody else so that everyone can go do their isolated individual thing and hope it works out well. But not in that culture. You want to focus all the resources because of the vision the family is going behind. You got to put it in one leader and away you go. It was everything. Your family ties, your emotional ties, your financial ties. And in that context, as a Jew, Jesus says something that's totally countercultural. When his DNA family butts in on him, tries to get him away from doing something that God wanted him to do in the moment, that was teach people. Here's what it says in the book of Mark. And his mother and his brothers came, and standing outside, they sent to him, and they called him, and a crowd was sitting around him, and they said to him, your mother and your brothers are outside seeking you. And he answered them, who are my mother and my brothers? And looking about at those who sat around him, he said, here's my mother, and here's my brothers, for whoever does the will of God, he is my brother and my sister and my mother. Jesus says no to Mother Mary here. He says no. Why? Because in this moment, his DNA family is outside the understanding of God, and he uses the moment to say, hold on, hold. You know who's my mother and father? Who's my brother? Who's my sister? Anybody who does the will of God, that's my brother. You're not like a brother to me. You're not like a, you are my brother. You are my sister. You know, we live in a culture where conservatives right now are totally complaining like we're redefining family. Everyone's redefining conservatives. All about, guess what? Jesus redefined family. He redefined family in that cultural context that no one had thought of before. And here's the great thing. I'm a part of that family. A lot of us in here are a part of that family. You know what? That family has done some crazy, amazing things. Yeah, I know. We've got some dysfunctional things in our family. We've got some awful stuff, i.e. crusades in our family history we're not real excited about. But I'll tell you what. My family that I'm a part of, that family is responsible for starting hospitals. That was my family. My family was responsible for public education. Look it up. It was my family. People in this country said, hey, we need to get people to be able to read the Bible. Let's start public education because God's blessed with our minds. My family has started orphanages. I've never seen an orphanage that didn't have roots, that weren't rooted in somebody who was a follower of Jesus Christ. I go on and on and on. Jesus started a family that's been changing the world and giving people real meaning and real connection, and nothing like it has ever come along before nor since. So what's it look like for us to be a member of that family? A member of the capital C church, and also a member of the small C church, Crossroads. What does that look like? Well, here again, we can go and we can see there's things that we can learn from DNA families, legal families that also apply to church families. And there's a matrix. You might have seen me share before. I don't know if I've shared in this context before or not, but I'll do it. I'll do it again. There's a matrix that every family has to have, and it's where there is a level of play and there is purpose. Every family has to have play and it has to have purpose. If you're in a family, and this is high play and this is high purpose. If you're in a family, DNA family, legal family, or church family, and there is high purpose and low play, that family is going to have a lot of stress. It's going to be stressful. I mean, some families, it's all about the kids getting ahead. That's all it's about. So get them in the right sports, get them in the right jobs, and it's all stress. Everyone's running everywhere, and everyone's always freaking out about how grades are, mom, dad. It's always stress because there's not a sense of play. It's all about, in fact, even extracurricular activities are all about well-rounding you out versus you just having fun. It's very stressful. Then there's other families that are all about play and not about purpose. play's great, but if it's only play, eventually it becomes very trivial. And then there's families we know, there's no play, no purpose. Those families are what's called awful. Those are families when you're 18 years old, you just leave. You never come back. You never stay another night in your parents' house. You're just, you're never there. And then there's families that have play and purpose, and these are families or churches where you find meaningfulness. They're meaningfulness. Now, why is it that church attendance is going down, down, down? Why is that? Why is it fewer and fewer people? Because unfortunately, we have increasing churches that are awful families. There's not a sense of play. There's not a sense of purpose other than getting together and citing biro prayers and singing songs that no one has liked for at least 30 years. And there's no sense of emotional connection with anybody. There's no understanding where we're going. And therefore, to be able to have all these elements in a healthy family, what we want to have here at the Crossroads family, I'll just share them with you. Number one is fun. We need to have play. We need play. We need to have fun. We do things like Super Bowl services. We do things like celebrations where there's alcohol every once in a while. We do things like talk about a urinal or something like that. And why do we do this? It's because we need to have fun. My kids could tell you some of the stupid things we do to have fun and play. It could be camping. Maybe it's going to a movie. Stupid things I'm embarrassed by, which, of course, I'll tell you right now. So my kids were, when they were younger, I really couldn't, well, maybe I did do this not too long ago. I'd walk around the house with not too much on, naked, and I would, I'd have maybe a towel in my front region walking around. I'd go like, hey, where's my wallet? Where is my wallet? And I'd be walking around looking for it, and eventually I'd realize my wallet was wedged in my butt cheeks. They go, Dad, oh, gross, and it would cause our family to laugh for about 5 minutes. It was great fun. That might not be fun for you, but I'm just telling you, whatever family you're involved in, I look at you, some of you right now, you're not having any fun at all right now. I look at your face. He's not enjoying that at all. Might not be more helpful for your family fun, but all of us have to figure that out. In fact, I want to give us a little family fun right now with some a video I just ran across. Yeah. So however it happens, we in our family here across from our family, are just aware of we can't be all about purpose. There's got to be fun. Second thing that every healthy church family has and members of a church family do is they make sacrifices. Make sacrifices. That's part of what family does. Our minivan that my parents gave us a couple years ago, my son's had it down at school. He was going someplace. Someone did something they shouldn't have done. They hit him, totaled him. It was his fault. Now he's got to go to work. He doesn't have a car. It's really been fascinating to see how Lena has her car, my oldest daughter, and they both live in the Clifton area, and how just it's natural for her to sacrifice her car and her schedule where she wants to go for her brother to use the car. It's because that's what family does. Family sacrifices for one another. And we might not always like it. We don't like it when someone takes our jeans and they don't ask us. But nonetheless, that's what families do. We sacrifice for one another. And this is part of our purpose around here. And when we see how that purpose is being recognized, it also causes us to have a bit of gratification in our family. There was a couple news stories just this past week that ran as we've been dispersing funds that many of us sacrifice through the Beans and Rice Fast to make happen to help people who have heroin addictions. And let's just look at some of the sacrifices that other people are recognizing. Check it out.
Fasting to fight the tri-state's growing heroin epidemic. Tonight, Crossroads Church is donating $200,000 to combat addiction. WLWT News 5's John London leading the way with how it all started with little rice and beans.
These photos reflect the childhood memories of a week-long beans and rice diet, one the adults in the picture will tell you has a distinct purpose in mind. Crossroads Community Church raised nearly $500,000 during that recent fast and donated $200,000 of it to these organizations, thereby joining the battle against the region's heroin habit.
Terry Phillips is the Crossroads Church Florence campus pastor. He said that all four campuses across Greater Cincinnati participated.
To take what they would have spent going out to eat at Applebee's or Olive Garden and say, instead say, let's put that money together and let's invest all of that money in areas that would make a difference in our city.
Mac MacArthur says the money's already helping babies born to heroin-addicted mothers. He directs Transitions, one of several organizations serving the recovery need.
It's going to help three people in one, because if they Healthy Newborn Project, it's going to help the new mother, the baby, and that, in essence, helps free up a bed at the Women's Treatment Center.
It's in a time where the need is more than it's ever been in the 30 years that I've been in Transitions, but it's also at a time when our funding is getting cut.
As much as the Crossroads contribution helps, grateful groups on the front line of the heroin crisis say what's needed most is a collective change of thinking.
They need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and just say no. That's the mindset. It doesn't work.
MacArthur maintains the public and politicians need to stop seeing addiction as a moral weakness and treat it like other chronic diseases, such as diabetes.
Whether people realize it or not is impacting families all around us, young, old, families that have money, families that don't have money. It is affecting everybody.
Phillips told of a local family that tried to help their daughter, but the 19-year-old died this week from an overdose.
Pastor Phillips noted that none of the money stayed in the church and that all of it went back to the community. So, so nice.
It really is nice. And to see where the rest of the donations went, visit WCPO.com.
Isn't that cool? I mean, it's fun when we as families sacrifice. It makes us healthy. It makes us like Jesus. It makes us like the rest of our brothers and sisters all around the globe, all around the city, for all time periods. And we get this cue from the book of Galatians in the Bible, chapter 6, verse 10. It says, "Let us do good to all people, especially those who are of the household of faith, those who are in our same family." Sacrificing takes a number of different forms. One of the ways it takes is we sacrifice by giving other people grace. I don't know why it is, but church people are the most criticized people, even by church people. Church people love to criticize church people. I love to criticize church people, and it's not good. It's not good. I remember a number of years ago, I was getting frustrated with some pastors in the area, and I was sort of venting to an older brother of mine, and he said, "You know, Brian, you do better giving grace to unbelievers than you do your own brothers." Like, you're exactly right. We need to give grace to all sorts of people inside of our family. And I don't know why it is we hold the local church to a higher standard than we do any other family. We all realize that in all of our families, there's levels of dysfunction. We don't think there are, but just ask our youngest children. There are. We all understand. But yet if we see any sense of dysfunction in our church family, like, "Oh, that's it. I can't. I'm out of here. Oh, it's what's wrong with people in the church." Hey, it's called people getting together. That's the way it works. We all know that in all of the families we've seen, there's times when there's financial stress. There always is times like that. And yet the first hint of financial stress in our church family, like, "Oh, who's mismanaging something? Oh, they're always talking about, oh, it's just part of what happens in a family." We all know in our DNA legal families, there's people in an extended family that don't give us a lot of energy. And yet we expect everybody in our church family to give us energy. No, we seem to offer grace and give grace to that. Every healthy family and members of healthy church families also understand there is structure. There has to be something in place that facilitates things. And this is one of the things I love about our family and the brothers and sisters, my brothers and sisters here. Our family has to operate differently than the family that I came from Pittsburgh to come to Crossroads. Because that family had about 400 people in it, could vote on everything, could have regular congregational meetings, have open mic dialogue, this and that. You get a church a certain size, you just cannot do that. In fact, actually, look at those things. A lot of those meetings were extremely unhealthy. We shouldn't have done that even with 400 people. But nonetheless, you have to get to a place where you're able to trust those in leadership. And I'm really, this is an amazing thing about our community. You're some of the most trusting brothers and sisters I've ever been around. Because you just can't know everything. And yet there is an ability to adhere to a vision and go after a purpose. And this link between structure in DNA families is tied to a link for a need for structure in the church family in the book of 1 Timothy, where we see qualifications for who actually can be in a leadership structure. It says this: "He must manage his own household well, with all dignity, keeping his children submissive. For if someone does not know how to manage his own household, how will he care for God's church or God's household?" So again, there's linkages here between the family of God and the local church and DNA legal family. There must be structure. The fourth thing that happens for every family is you're committed to the local family. You're committed. And this is something that's really rough because very few of us understand our church as our family or as a family. We view our church as a religious nonprofit from which I purvey resources from. We view our church as a local nonprofit, and if I find something else that does something better or bothers me less, I might check that out there. Or I might have five of them that I slot in and out of based on how I'm feeling a specific day, really not having any commitments to any of the family members who are there. I mean, what would it be like for any of the Tome kids just saying, well, I go to the Tome family. I go there, and I also go to the Smith family, and I go to this. No, there needs to be, for our own spiritual formation, some sort of identification with a local family. It needs to be something that we're committed to. And I know, I can just tell you for myself and our family, we're more committed to our church family here than we've ever been. Incredibly, some of you are going, shoot, darn it, I thought you were like leaving soon. No, not leaving. I'm committed to this family. I'm making adjustments to my life to be in this family for as long as possible. I take extended times off from time to time to keep myself fresh. And I've just seen in Cincinnati, there's fewer and fewer people who've been to the same post that I've been in for 18 plus years. It's because I'm committed to this family. I want to be in this family. Why is it that if I'm in town and I still have energy, I don't preach some days? Chuck does, or a campus pastor, or somebody else. It's because it's not healthy for our family to only hear from one personality. It's not healthy. In fact, it's not healthy for the long-term viability of our family for people to thrive on my personality and charisma and good looks. I mean, we need Crossroads to go way beyond my longevity, way beyond, because our family needs to endure for a long, long time. And so I look at these things and I think through those lenses. Got some crazy job offer not too long ago. I'm like, what? I'm not going to leave my family? You kidding me? How in the world would I leave my family? Because I'm committed to this family. I'm excited to be a part of this family. And this is why when I think that I'm in community with other family members, and I think they're family members, but yet we say things that always confuse me, like, I love what you guys are doing. I go, you guys? Like, I can't imagine Mariah saying, man, I love what you guys are doing. Or someone say, hey, how's Crossroads doing? It's like my kids saying, hey, how are the Tomes doing? Well, you know what the Tomes should do? Olivia said to me, you know what the Tomes should do? No, she said, hey, let's go do this thing. Well, you know what Crossroads should do? And these are all signs that we might be seeing us just as a religious 501c3. And not the ideal, beautiful ideal that Jesus gives us of a family, the family that's doing life together, and certainly not knowing everybody in the temple structure, but having an awareness of who's in our oikos. Who are those people we're seeing on a regular basis who we're active with and building into? And every once in a while, I run across family members who inspire me. And we have a brother and sister, Jake and Sarah, who have been generous enough to share their story with us. Check it out.
My wife and I both moved to Cincinnati 14 years ago for college. We met running track at UC. We dated. We fell in love. We got married. We decided to build our life here. No friends and family for miles and miles. So we started building relationships. Then one day, a friend invited us to Crossroads. I met Jesus here and got baptized in 2004. We started making friends to serve with and grow with. Friends we could encourage and pray for. We broke bread together. We built into each other. We had children together. Life was really good. It felt like family. About a year ago, we were expecting our third child, a sweet baby boy who we called Levi. At Levi's 20-week ultrasound, he was given a fatal diagnosis. No working kidneys. No sustainable lung function after birth. No medical chance for survival. Our community rallied around us. They sat in the pit with us, grieved with us, and they wanted to serve us, so we let them. One friend set up a meal train immediately. For 6 straight months, we never had to cook a meal. Others watched our kids while we went to doctor's appointments and date nights, all battled in prayer for Levi to be healed. We were bound together, a cord not broken. When one friend prayed for a vision, another answered with one. When we couldn't parent our children, they did it for us. Discipline and dirty diapers. My wife, Sarah, carried Levi to 35 weeks. At the hospital, she invited 5 of her closest friends into the delivery room. They read scripture over us, prayed for us, and praised Jesus. Levi was born. In a hospital room full of hope, we prayed. We anointed him with oil. We held him. And we wept. We were given 76 minutes of joy and peace before he was fully healed and restored with Jesus. Over the next week, we had dozens of people from our Crossroads family handle everything we asked them to, and many things we didn't. While our family grieved, they carried the burden of arranging a funeral and gave so generously we never paid a bill. They never forgot our kids, giving them sweet gifts and special date nights to celebrate their brother. Most importantly, we were unified in our grief. It was a cross we never had to carry alone. If we didn't have this family, we would have been lost. This experience has radically changed our picture of what family looks like. The kind of family a community of believers can create.
It's beautiful. What do we see with our brothers and sisters there? They had groups of people that they were having fun with. There was purpose there, actually, as a result of the structure of the big family of Crossroads. They were able to meet up and connect with people on go trips and such. They were sacrificing for one another. They're committed to one another. And there's a fullness in their life that couldn't have been had outside of church family. I don't want anything from anybody today. I just want something for you. This is the lineage. This is the lineage that Jesus invites us into. It's the family structure that's been changed in the world. It's the family structure that's been giving people hope and personal fulfillment. And the best way to experience it is to be committed to it and to be an honorable family member. Let me just pray for us right now. God, thank you so much for examples like Sarah and Jake. And I pray that you continue to help them on their emotional healing process. And I also pray that you would continue to bring around us the people who we are to be in family relationships with. Help us to, those of us who are a part of the Crossroads family, to see that, to adhere it, to not apologize for it. And for others of us who are not there, not ready for that, keep working us on us and in your own timing. Thank you, God, for the greatest family that's ever been created and including me in it, the worldwide family of God. I pray these things in your name, Jesus. Amen.